Engage.
Hi everyone, and welcome to another Sunday Roast. We have some guests joining us as we go, but our first is David. David, can you tell us a bit about yourself for anyone who's new to the show?
Yes, hello. I am an increasingly reluctant political commentator who has real life stuff that I do instead as well. I also have a blog which I do try and promote. It's called Politically Enraged, and it cost me 60 quid today, so please subscribe. And other than that, I spend a lot of time talking about politics on the internet and how increasingly unhinged it all is. So I'm either a political commentator or I desperately need medication because this is an unreal scenario.
Wonderful. And we have Big Match
Wonderful.
Studios. Big Match, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, I do politics commentary. I've joined here very randomly. So yeah, I'm just here, guys. As surprised as you guys look as surprised as I looked when Sunak called the election. So
My wonderful co-host Alex, can you tell us a bit about yourself for anyone who's new to the podcast and the show?
hi, my name is Alex. I am a YouTuber, historian, and journalist, and I'm with my co-host, my marvelous co-host, Max.
My name is Max. I run the Robespierre channel where I talk about British politics and Brexit in particular. So for anyone who doesn't know, there's a general election on, right?
That's crazy. Wow, I didn't
Is
even know
there?
that.
Oh my God.
Big
I
Maj,
didn't
how's
even.
it going?
Yeah, it's
Big
all
Maj
good.
here.
It's a lot of busy work, like a lot of content to cover. And it's like every day there's more stuff and you're like, what do you cover today? And it's a nightmare of just endless content.
I would call it a high quality problem.
Yeah, I mean it's better than it being boring, I guess, but it's like, okay, Sunak lied about the 2K tax thing, and then you've got all the commentary around it, and then you're like, okay, which clips am I actually going to bother using? And then you're like, this is actually stuck.
Did you feel a bit mixed when Farage announced he was going to be sticking around for another five years?
Do you know what? I wasn't too surprised that he was coming back, to be honest, because like reform do need like a big player. Like whatever you think of Lee Anderson. He's not a big player like Farage is. And so I always found it weird that like I think he was waiting for the election to be called. And because he can go in the US in November, it doesn't really affect him too much, if that makes sense. Whereas I think if the election was going to be in the autumn, it would impact him. But yeah, no, he's come back to just cause problems and he's going to do a good job of that.
I just keep thinking of that Eminem song, Guess Who's Back? Back
Yeah.
again. That Pratt's back. Warn your friends.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I always suspected he was going to do something because Farage is the grift that keeps on grifting, you know? Like, one of the things that's really frustrated me is he announces his candidacy and then the next day he gets milkshaked and everyone's like, oh my God, I don't have Farage milkshake. And I was like, shut up, giving him press. This is the second time it's happened. Like, we have a precedent for this. Just talk about how awful he is. But I'm not surprised at all, you know? Like, I think, you know, he like his whole political career has been underscored by Brexit and it's brought misery, but with misery comes increased radicalism. So it's the perfect time for him to come slithering back into British politics, isn't it? So
Yeah,
I
I mean
mean,
he's winning the arguments on immigration though. Like he has shifted the conversation massively on that and he's gonna continue to feed off it.
he's also
Definitely.
shifted it on Brexit. Emily Maitlis got right in his face over that.
The whole thing is nuts to be honest, but he's won the conversation on immigration. Like the Tory party, like, yeah, net immigration is too high, and I'm like, Rishi mate, I've got news for you. You've been in charge for a while now. If you thought it was a problem, you would have dealt with it.
No, but you're not allowed to, the past is irrelevant to Rishi.
That's no. You gotta
As
remember
we
when it
saw in
comes
the
to
debate.
when you discuss the good things like the furlough scheme and the energy cap, he's like, yo, that was me, guys. That was me. You know, I did that. And it's like when you discuss the other stuff, he's like, nah, that wasn't me. I wasn't even there, bro. Like, I didn't even know about politics. You know, I wasn't even elected in 2010. So yeah, he's like, yeah, who are you talking about? Not me, but yeah.
The best thing with that, though, as well, is inflation, because he's like, look, inflation's down, everyone. We won the war on inflation. And I'm like, were you in charge when it went up? Was that your fault then? And he's like, did you see the furlough scheme that I did? That's good. And I'm just like, geez, you are so annoying. Oh my God, why is there a thumbs up over my head? What was that?
We've never
She made a
figured that
great
out.
point.
We've
Well, you
obviously
know,
never figured that out. We don't know why that happens. It does happen.
it's when Zoom agrees with you. Zoom is like, that's a great point you just made there. Oh, it's happening again.
Ah, is it?
See that? No, we just look stupid now. We look like, you know, Spider-Man when Maguire's like, go, fly, go, web, go.
Performance
That's us right now.
problems.
Does anyone think Farage will win Clacton?
Nah.
No.
I don't think so.
Rejoin EU are putting a dolphin up.
Please be
Because,
serious.
interestingly, the person who put the dolphin up last time was a conservative who's now in the Rejoin EU party, Broadchurch. I found out over this week the Rejoin EU party have a Trotskyist, a former UKIP member, and former conservative MEPs.
They just
The
take
UKIP
anyone.
member's more of a joke, Davey. Don't worry. He ran as a prank and absolutely did a number in on the UKIP party. It's a bit of a claim to fame, to say the least.
I like that then. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I could genuinely see him possibly. I don't think it's a cert that he's not going to, because there's a lot of people that are that stupid. But I think the big thing with it is there's upsides and downsides, because ultimately, if he wins, then he finally can, like, his grift is done, you know? His Mr. Underdog, I've never been in charge, woe is me, is over, and he actually has to do some hard work. And I think that it would probably dispel some of the legend of Farage, though I was wrong about that with Donald Trump. But, you know, if he loses, we get to call him 8-time loser Nigel Farage. So there's upsides everywhere, really.
Do you think he'll beat the Dolphin?
I
Sorry.
actually think he'll win the seat. Now, I'm not going to put money on it, and at the moment, the polling is not very good for him. But I think we have another 4 weeks, and all the only direction he can go is up. And I think he's. I have a feeling it's 50-50 at the moment, but I wouldn't guarantee it. But I'm pretty sure he's going to win the seat.
So you
And
think
this
win the
is,
seats, that's definitely beat the Dolphin.
yeah,
Oof.
but I think this is actually a disaster, because if he wins that seat, what is he going to do? He's going to say, look, the Conservatives need to come to my side. I need to join the Conservative Party. And the members of the party are the more extreme in the Conservative Party, not so much the MPs themselves. The members are absolutely batshit. So yeah, so the members of the Conservative Party are insane, and they would back somebody like Farage as the leader of the Conservative Party. So I think that's what he wants to do. He wants to become leader of the Conservative Party. And then you imagine him in opposition as leader. He's not going to be in Parliament. He doesn't care about Parliament. He's not going to be sitting in committee meetings. He's not going to be listening to, complaints about potholes and stuff like that, as an MP. But he wants to become the leader of the Conservative Party. So I think after the election, when the Conservatives do implode, they'll want Farage on board, and they'll invite him on. As he's an MP, he can easily switch across, and then they'll make him. I have a feeling there'll be a campaign to make him leader of the Conservative Party, and then he'll be dictating the narrative once again, and the media are going to give him as much attention as he wants. And you're going to see the Labour Party have to make a decision. Okay, do we listen to Farage? Do we go in his direction, like the Conservatives, or do we remain in the centre? And unfortunately, when it comes to Farage, the media allow him to say whatever he wants unchallenged, and we're going to see, unfortunately, I think we're going to see the Labour Party go in the direction of Farage, unless there is a real challenge on the left, a bigger challenge. It would have to be a bigger challenge on the left for the Labour Party to move from the centre to the left. So, like, for example, the Greens or something that Owen Jones is conjuring up.
I think he's probably going to beat the Dolphin. I mean, I'd love it if he didn't, don't get me wrong, but I think he'll probably beat the Dolphin. But I agree with all of that. This is the guy that has steered politics from outside of it for a really long time, and I think that he probably sees this as his golden hour, really. Not to mention, because the golden shower is probably going to get back in America. So, you know, and then Marine Le Pen as well. You know, honestly, I don't know what is happening, but I think ultimately, when it comes to Farage and what he's been masterminding for a long time, I feel like this eternally, you know, like, you just can't get through to people that believe that Brexit was the best thing that we've ever done, that it's still causing disasters. It just hasn't been done in the right way. And until, like, I just think until you disprove that, people are just still going to be saying it. And I don't know how we ever get back to healthy discussion about it. It really is driving me crazy now, because in my view, I'm just like, I don't really understand, like, what it is that we could do to move forward from it without just, like, you know, lobotomizing a bunch of people, because I'm just so tired of hearing people say it's not been done properly. It's like, the only thing that had, like, if you look at the Conservative manifesto from 2019, they said an appoint-style Australia-style immigration system, which they didn't do. So I'll give Farage's due on that. But when it comes to the rest, you did the thing. You got the thing. The thing is what you want, and it was crap, and we all said it'd be crap, and now you're all whinging about it. Like, how many fucking flipping people have to tell you that it was bad before you go, oh wow, maybe those people that actually pick up books sometimes were correct.
Good pun, by the way, with flipping and flipper and dolphins.
It was entirely intentional.
Yeah, you're right. And Brexit is the elephant in the room, which we will come on to, because like if you listen to his speech, it was almost unreal, and I didn't see many pick it up. But basically, if you watch the Leave EU thing where it says hospitals will be better, and it'll be, in the words of Gemma Forte, a lovely golden spa that will make everything better and make you feel great. But if you go through that Leave EU video, it's improve hospitals, improve the economy, decrease crime, improve schools, steel will be better, fishing will be better, farming will be better. And you're going through all that list. And literally, when you listen to his speech, he slags off every single item in that video that is meant to be good and improved by Brexit. To which you then go, so Brexit wasn't anything then. It didn't make a difference, as you promised in your video. Madge, do you think he'll beat Flipper?
I think he's probably got a good shot. I think based on what you guys are saying, and like, no, I did you'd have to look at that area, that constituency. That's one of the problems, and he's a good campaigner, and he's going to put a lot of energy into that area. The only thing is, I think the other people might say, well, you didn't even want to be an MP. You were saying you weren't going to run, and how committed are you to this place? And they could mention his record as an MEP, which would be hilarious because he was never there, for the most part.
What department? We're bringing dolphins again.
Fishing. Yeah, he was fishing. Yeah, it goes
Fishing.
full circle, really. Yeah,
Do you know how many times he turned up?
so like four or something like that.
Less.
Oh my God,
Maybe.
I have no idea, to be honest with you.
Less than four.
Two.
You got a good chance. You got a good chance of winning
Zero.
on.
No, once. He turned up once.
You guys were so
Which is
close. I set you guys up for
so.
success. He
Always
did.
doing the work for me. That's what it is.
Honestly, but yeah, what's it called? With the Flipper thing, maybe he's got a good shot with him wanting to be Tory leader. He's played the long game. Like, you're talking about 30 odd years to get to where he is now. I mean, that would be nuts. Like, if that was his goal. But I think he's more happy in Parliament just staying in the conversation. He'll get more media appearances because it'd be one of the few reform like MPs. If you think about that, they've got if Lee Anderson wins, you got one. You've got Tice, which is two, and then you've got Farage, which is three. I think, you know what was interesting actually last week, when you had Perkis on, she was saying Question Time seem and those kind of news programs seem to be going for views and virality. Question Time, I think, is not owned by the BBC, it's owned by another company, isn't it? Some sort of media company.
Yes.
And so it might be the case that they can charge the BBC more money based on how many views they get. And you did notice that kind of during Brexit as well. They had Farage on because he was constantly for views. He was viral. Every week he was on, those episodes like on Twitter would go completely crazy. And I think that's one of the reasons they brought him on, because they know like he gets engagement. And that's the key for social media, it's engagement. The more engagement you get, the more it gets shared and the more influence you get. And so that's why it's like the news business is one of the problems we have in this country, where they're desperate for views. And it's desperate for sensationalism. And that is Nigel Farage. Like, I'll never forget in that debate with Nick Clegg, where Nick Clegg said you were wrong about like Romania, like immigrants from Romania coming here and the numbers. And he was like, well, all of them could be here by tea time. And the audience like, oh, I can't believe it. All of Romania here. And you're like, how stupid are you people?
He went to this is so, always so much to unpack. Okay, between 2010 and 18, what percentage of times did Farage or UKIP turn up on Question Time? Max, what do you
I would
think?
say 70%.
7-0.
Yeah.
Yep. Davey?
I'm going to hedge my bets and go with a very immature 69%.
I'll go 40%. So I don't know if it was that much.
No, but it's funny that you think that. That's interesting. 25. Which
Yeah, I
is
think it
still
was in around the
huge.
Brexit referendum, though. I think that's where you'd want to look at, in the election period, because if they're on in like 2011, no one cares, or 2012. But once you're talking about 2014, 15, that's where you get the influence. That's where you get into people's minds, because in the off season, no one cares. No one really cares that much. But once
Because
you head towards
I
an election,
remember
people care.
I remember a statistic, but I can't find it now, but I remember a statistic that said that Farage or somebody from UKIP was on maybe it was around the time of the referendum, it was like 60 or 70% of the time.
That one, he was, it felt like he had a season pass. He was on more than David Dimbleby, it felt like.
Because
Every week you saw him.
something I heard about that was that he had made himself available. So he was always available, so that if somebody dropped out, they grab the phone, get Nigel on the phone. Nigel, can you turn up tonight? Yeah, no problem. I'll be there in 5 minutes. So he was like a backup. And then of course he would use that for, well, now let's talk about Brexit. Let's talk about leaving the European Union. Oh, what's the problem tonight? Fishing? Well, if we leave the EU, that would fix that problem. So
But that's the irony of it all. He could have actually been in the commission fixing fishing on the inside,
yeah,
and he couldn't be
but
bothered to turn up.
he never believed in the EU project, to be fair, and
I don't
he
think he
never cared
believes
about
in
fishing.
anything by himself, in his own fat face.
He never like he was just there as like to boost his own profile. So they could say Nigel Farage MEP, and that's the way they'd push it. So it makes sense why he'd want to be there. You know, you get the salary, MEP salary, you get all the expenses, and you get a bigger platform. Is ultimate wins, and plus he won the elections easily as well because it's a PR vote.
I think really, like the problem is as well, we always reduce it down to him, but like his this like I'm hesitant to even call it a party. It's not, it's a freaking limited company. But if you look, like I made a studious effort a few months ago to go through Reform UK's manifesto, and if you actually read it, it's fucking batshit. Anyone that understands politics reads that and goes, "That's great." They want to cut 5% off of every government office's budget, right? That just is insane. But think specifically about the fact that that includes the Office for Health. So that's 5% off the NHS's budget. And then they want to give us vouchers to go private if it takes too long. They want to give us vouchers, which is going to subsidise private healthcare. So you're going to take money away from the NHS, and then you're going to give more money to private healthcare, and you think that that's going to fix the problems that we've got?
Tice got pulled up on that about the healthcare thing. He was saying like, what do you call it? Oh yeah, you know, the interviewer was saying you'd give more money to private, you know, companies and stuff. And he was like, no, we could use organizations. It's like that's still private, you dumbass. And
That's
so he struggled to answer that one. The one interesting policy I will give you that they have is they want to get everyone, they want to change the income threshold from 12.5K, I think it's that, to 20K, so you wouldn't pay any income tax to it. I think that one would cut through, but. You know, if any sensible interview asked, like, how are you going to pay for that? You know,
there
he'll
is a way.
crumble instantly.
Like,
You
where,
would.
if you're taking money away from the exchequer, where are you going to get it from elsewhere? Like, if you're going to balance the budget, so.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. So, but that is the most interesting policy they have, and it's very different to what any of the other parties have.
He also has this net zero immigration policy. So for everyone who comes in, so everyone who goes out, another one can come in. But does that include British people who leave? Like, and then when he's asked about, well, you know, what about people coming in? We need, like, there's a shortage. Then he says, well, we'll create exemptions for social care and for the NHS. And then my question, like, of course, I'm not able to ask him this question, but I ask in my videos. I say, okay, well, like, who's covered under, like, under the NHS? Is it like cleaners? What if somebody works for a private company and in the NHS? So if like they're cleaning offices in the NHS, are they exempt? What if they work in the morning in a private company and then in the NHS? Are they still exempt? So, you know, it's a sort of catch-all. Yeah, the NHS will be exempt, but the NHS is not just one thing. It's not just a hospital or a bunch of hospitals. It's much more complex. But then
But
it doesn't.
ultimately, the big problem that I have with what's going on though as well, because obviously like fixating on the NHS, and that's obviously something I've got something of an expertise. Not, well, it's a bit hesitant to even say that, but you know what I mean. But all of the plans for the NHS are crap. Theirs is just a special kind of crap. Like I've tried to kind of explain to people who are like Labour loyalists about why in particular Wes Streeting's plans are terrible. And number one, it's an expansion of a Conservative plan. Number two, Matt has just said that. Like that's what Reform are offering. Like, let's use private entities to bolster the NHS. But a private entity on a public body parasitizes off of it. And that's what everyone's offering. And this is what frustrates me, is we've got these parties pissing into the same pot instead of talking about real solutions, which there are. When it comes to fixing the NHS, we just need to start superfunding it. We need to be giving people competitive salaries. We need to remove those awful contracts that I was forced to give to junior doctors when I was working in the NHS. But we also need to look at how we attract people away from private entities by doing that. And we do need to look at bringing people in from abroad. Plus, we need to completely change education in the UK. We are not funneling people into these jobs. You should in Sweden, I think it is, doctors are treated like a special type of person. Whereas in the UK, it's like, oh, you're a doctor, sweet. Like they save people's lives, to varying degrees. And it's incredibly important that we give people the respect they're due. Doctors have very difficult lives. Nurses, think of what these people have been through during the pandemic. Some of the people that I worked with have retired or left the country because they were treated so crappily by the NHS. This stuff has to stop, or it's just, and the politicians that we're looking at right now, none of them have the answer.
Privatization. So you do that, there's two problems. The first is you're giving them profit. That isn't going to someone's health. That's going into someone's bank balance instead of their health. And if you do it in a large enough scale, that is a huge amount of money that could be going towards saving some child's life, but instead is going into someone else's bank balance for no reason. There's no reason why any of it should be private. I don't see the point. I really don't. I think get rid of the entire thing and just nationalize the lot. It would cause a furore. And that's part of the reason why they never did it in the first place, but that would be one solution. The other thing that never gets brought up, I'm getting sick to the back teeth of it, we have a birth rate of 1.56. Didn't get brought up in any debates along with Brexit. That means you need 400,000 people a year coming in to make up for that deficit. So Richard Tice can come up with his plan, but I've never heard anyone challenge him and go, well, what do you do with the 400,000 deficit that you have yearly, which you need to somehow recover? And it's 600,000 a year. So he's still replacing 600,000 Brits or people in the UK leaving. And he's got to replace them with people that he would deem foreign, which would still piss off everyone. And if he doesn't do that, you'll have an economic collapse and downturn, which won't recover for decades, like you saw in Ireland, like you've seen in Japan, like you've seen in Italy. There is literally, at the moment, the size of Glasgow leaving the UK every year. You cannot sustain that. And it's because, and this is the bigger picture, and they're not talking about it. We are in competition with the EU, with Canada, with America, with Australia, with New Zealand, because all of those countries are saying, come here, we'll give you a better quality of life. And I'll finish on this. Nigel Farage did a video where he went to Bulgaria, which was backed by Channel 4. He went to a traveler community, Roma, in Bulgaria. A fat, I kid you not, I will show this clip. It's just unreal. He interviews a family which is connected to the head family of the community, and they are living in what I would call, if you were to see in the UK, a pre-build. It's not completely constructed, so you can see the brickwork. There's no mortar on the outside. There's broken windows, broken doors. There's no paved street. It's mud as a road, and they're being told before you ask them the question that they go into garbage cans to get food. And he asked the translator to ask them, would they consider coming to Britain where they could get guaranteed a job and they can have a lovely life and they get access to the NHS? And they went, no. And the first thing they said as a reason was because of the weather. That was the first. They would rather go in a garbage can and live in what we would consider a third world dwelling with mud roads and starvation than come to the UK. But Farage, when told that, didn't want to believe it. And he's told that by the head of community. The community also said, we're a community, we want to stick together, we don't want to move, we know the area, we know the language, we know the culture, we're happy where we are, which is another thing that you add on. But it's the first thing that came out of their mouth was the weather. And you go, Jesus Christ, is it that
It's pretty bad.
that's pretty bad. We're now seeing what it's like in the streets, and the high streets are in decay. We know that poverty's 4 million children in poverty. Like, literally, parents going without food so their kids can eat, kids going without food, having one or two meals a day. Why would you move here? And yet, we still manage to have that population coming in. I'm just looking at this and just going, it's a complete mess, and there's no way out. Sorry, have I depressed everyone?
I live in England. I was already depressed.
Oh, well, you've made us happy by returning to the show finally.
Blame my diseases, plural. I think one thing that's been quite interesting so far is the dearth of policy that's come out during all this as well. Like, I know they're waiting for the manifestos. I'm not stupid, but it's like I said earlier. I just feel like I'm going crackers because some of the policy that I genuinely feel like Rishi Sunak has like sniffed Michael Gove's coat and then immediately gone to announce a policy. The National Service one really underscores how lost the Conservatives are because I genuinely think that they could have snatched up a lot of votes by saying, let's make a voluntary National Service. Are you feeling lost? Do you not want to waste your time at university doing one of those degrees that I've said are pointless? Why don't you opt into National Service? But instead, of course, they went with the Conservative ideology of we're going to tell you what to do, which is fix our problems and blah, blah, blah. There's no concept of the country that we are. You can't spend years going, freedom, we want a free country, we want our sovereignty and freedom. And then go, how would you like to be mandated into slavery on a stipend? Like, what is this man?
I think it's these focus groups. Maybe it's the conservatives are going to these focus groups, which are maybe elderly people in their own constituencies, so strong Tory constituencies, and they're like asking them, what don't you like? They're like, we don't like young people because they're always
Young
on their
people.
phones and stuff like that. Okay, what would you like us to do? Well, national service was a good thing. I wasn't around for it myself. I heard about it in like it's what well, it ended in 1960. So, I wasn't around for it myself. But I think young people need a clip around the ear and they need a kick in the ass to back in to do something. And then the conservatives go, okay, yeah, we'll run with that because what we're seeing is like core Tory policies. They're not expanding their base. They're just trying to hold on to as much of their base as possible, or they're trying to reach out to Reform UK voters. But don't, is there nobody in number 10 who realizes that's not where most people vote? Most people vote in the centre. You need to move back to the centre. Like you have abandoned the centre and now Labour are occupying that area. Why don't you present a policy? This isn't advice to Rishi Sunak because we don't want him to win,
I don't
but
think, like, I love you guys, but I don't think Rishi Sunak sat watching fucking Sunday
No,
roast in a
he
cinema
is. He
on
definitely is. He's like,
it.
why aren't we doing that? Guys, what's going on?
If we do this, then we'll win. I just have
You'll
to look
be.
at the camera and raise my eyebrows a
It's
little
like,
bit
that
more.
man with the hat has a point. Why are we appealing to old people?
Rishi, a UBI, introduce a UBI, then you'll be guaranteed back into number 10. I'm sure you would.
He's gone for Brexit lies again, hasn't he?
I mean,
Yeah, that 2K thing, that debate was nuts, honestly. I live streamed it and I was like, this is crazy. Like when Starmer dinged him on the maths thing, he's like, I thought you're the maths guy, and you're saying 7.5 is lower than 7.2 million.
7.2.
And I was like, that's hilarious. That I actually laughed pretty hard at that one. And then when they asked Starmer how's he gonna resolve the NHS strikes, he's like, oh, get in the room and resolve it with them. It's like, okay, and do what? How are you gonna resolve it? And he was like,
That,
I'll just get in the room with them.
no
And I'm like,
answer.
and then what?
Do you know what? That really reminded me of the time when I don't know who writes his speeches for him, and I don't have much time for Starmer, as you might know,
Yeah.
but he did this speech where he was talking about the NHS, and he was like, it's not just money that's going to fix the NHS. We need to use technology. And I clipped that bit and just like put myself in afterwards and went, what are you going to pay for it with exactly? Claps. Like, it's like, we need technology. Yes, obviously, but you use money to buy technology here. You can't say we're not going to use money to solve the problem when money is the thing that's going to solve the problem.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt because he said CT scans. And I know that people are leaving radiology in quite large numbers because AI tech has come in to be able to do the CT scans and more effectively than humans, which is fascinating. So there's an element of that that you could argue would speed things up, but you're still going to need someone to check it. And again, just because you lose a member of staff doesn't mean you could then go and take a 40K salary and flip it into a £1 million piece of machinery.
Can I ask? Can I ask people's reaction to Starmer when he or both of the candidates when they responded to the first? I think it was the first lady who asked about cost of living. She said, that she's struggling with the cost of living crisis, and I actually think Starmer's response was a bit more human,
Oh,
while
yeah.
Rishi Sunak was like, "Okay, let me read my card." That's the way it came across for me.
Yeah, that's Sunak's whole game plan, isn't it? Like he empathizes for as long as he knows that he's meant to raise his eyebrows in the center and look sad, and then goes back to the script. And I don't really think Starmer's much better, but he did say like, you've been let down and I'm very sorry and stuff like that. And that's, I genuinely think, as crazy and trite as this is, I think that's what a lot of people want to hear. I'm sorry that the last few years have been absolutely crap, you know? I'm sorry that things have been so bad and that you've been struggling. It's not for nothing that politicians can actually say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, this isn't good enough. Some, it might be rhetoric, but it's still stuff that we all want to bloody hear. So it was nice to hear a politician say it.
Bit of empathy, yeah, for sure. But I didn't feel any either of them really said anything that solved her problems.
There was no
So
policy
Rishi,
solution. I
no.
agree, there was no.
So Rishi said, "Oh, I'll decrease your tax," and you're going, "What? You're not 50 quid off a tax bill a month, and then you'll run down the services, which means she's got to go private and spend more money on stuff that she didn't need in the first place." I mean,
Her thing was.
that's why I felt that Starmer was weak. There were lots of little holes that he was giving. And
Yeah.
I was almost, I almost like felt like shouting at the screen, can you please just nail him on this? You should know these things. Like, I'm a political commentator, you're in charge of a political party, but I'm like, no. That's where you nail him. I mean, it was interesting as well with the Spectator coming out of all things. Best man at his wedding, I think you mentioned, Davey.
I did, yes. It was the best man at his wedding, and I just cracked up when I saw that.
He's lost his, if they've lost the Spectator, it's over.
Yeah, they're watching on.
Spectacularly.
Yeah, I think I'm surprised he didn't mention GB Energy in the context of the lady saying that she couldn't afford to turn her oven on. Because Starmer the other day was claiming it would knock £400 off your energy bill. Well, that's £400 a year or per quarter or what. I have no idea. But I'm surprised he could have shoehorned that in there. But like the host did a really bad job, I think, especially as the debate went on. Because he was going to address the 2K tax thing. And that's why it's driving me nuts when I was like, oh, it's a 4D chess move. And like, no, he was literally going to address it. And the host is like, no, we'll talk about tax later. And then they never got back to it. Drove me nuts. I was like, well, at what point can he address it? You know, after half the audience are falling asleep from two of the most boring dudes to ever in the history of the game. Honestly.
I agree. They are both pretty boring, and Starmer's nasal voice is not great. I think that's actually, unfortunately for him, something to do with a medical
Could
ailment of
be.
some sort of genetics or something. But I didn't like the fact that Sunak kept just railroading the female host, and he seems to do that with women all the time.
He does. He has a profound disrespect for women, which I've noticed in terms of whenever he's talking to a woman who's been adversarial towards him, he has that look of, you
Disdain.
shouldn't be talking to me. Yeah, and it really annoys me because it's rare that he pulls it out for a man. I've noticed at PMQs and stuff like that. But my God, if a female MP stands up and says something he doesn't like, he gives them this look that just makes me want to
Which is
stick my fingers up
funny
his nose.
considering who's the breadwinner in his house.
Exactly, yeah. Maybe that's what
Yeah.
it is, though. He's very, very short, and his wife is a zillionaire, so he's probably like, fucking tall women, how
So
dare
I'm the
you?
bloody Prime Minister. You can't talk to me like that.
Yeah.
Who do you think won the battle of my dad was a toolmaker, my mum was a nurse, or my mum was a pharmacist, my dad was a GP? Who do you think's winning that one, like in terms of the references?
I think
Because I
it.
can't lie, I haven't heard Sunak say that before. As soon as I heard him say my dad was a toolmaker, I'm like, fuck my life. Is that my wife works in the NHS. I'm like, I swear your wife's a lawyer though. So, you know, is she
No,
like,
she's a
look,
doctor.
guys, is she a medical
Yeah, she
professional?
is. Yeah, she's a doctor.
Oh, okay, fair. I heard she was a lawyer, but no, that's fair. He's like, my wife works in the
Are you
NHS, she
mixing
gets
up
it.
Tony Blair and Starmer?
No, I couldn't do that. One has charisma and the other one puts me to sleep. So, you know,
Yeah,
when I hear Tony Blair speak, I'm like, oh, okay, this sounded semi-interesting and like he's actually funny and he's got jokes. I listen to Starmer and I'm like, man, was that only 2 minutes? What the hell's going on here?
it's,
So
do you know
yeah.
what? Do you know what? Being as I really dislike him, I'm going to give him some credit that he didn't spend the entire debate doing what he always does in question time, which is, Mr. Prime Minister is a bad man. And I'm like, you just memorize what you're going to say before you go up to speak.
Could
It
you imagine him
literally.
in court? Your Honor, the defense says that he didn't murder him, but we know he did.
That's what I mean as well. This is why that debate was so crazy. He was a barrister and he loves to tell us that. Not to mention he was in charge of the crime, was he guilty of it? And then he's there going, well, actually, well, no, that's
Well,
not quite.
Davey,
And I'm
I
like, what?
ran a public service and it was the CPS. You know
God,
when he
I
got
just.
animated when they mentioned the football and he was like, oh, you think he's got to be more
Yeah.
radical, play safe? He's like, no, I think he's got to be strategic. And I'm like, blood, that wasn't the question.
That's just.
Like, what was that about? I'm like, stop asking politicians about football. It's the worst thing to ask them.
Honestly.
But I mean, all he had to say was go for goal. That's it. Just go for goal. Go,
He's
go.
like, my plan is
That's
to
all he had
score
to
more
say. And
goals
he
than the
started.
opposition.
Yeah,
That's
it was
it.
just too analytical. But then that's a reflection of.
No.
That's
What
a
he should have said
reflection of where
is,
he's come from, isn't it? Like.
what he should have said is, we play 4-4-2, long back to Harry Kane, flicks it on to Ollie Watkins. Ollie Watkins with the goal, bang, 1-0. Park the bus.
Wouldn't it be fantastic if Starmer had, like when Sonic was saying something, Starmer had said, like, for fuck's sake.
Do you know what he should have said?
That would increase the ratings and that would get people watching the show, I imagine.
There's a guy from Manchester. He goes, I would have got Pep Guardiola. At least he would have bought a Barca starter play. That's what I would have said. I would have got Pep Guardiola. But no, not to derail this whole thing with football stuff, because it's not for everyone. Yeah, I think it was bad, and I don't. I hope it's better. I think having Morden and Reina there will be a much more kind of like, these are two people who actually can argue and do have, like, they're not massive introverts. Like, you can tell with those two, like, they are people who talk to one other person and they're like, look, guys, my social battery is finished. I have nothing more to say to anyone. At least, like, the rest of the crew have a bit more energy and a bit more, like, ability to argue and have jokes
Do
a
you
little bit.
feel it reminded me a little bit, and I'd love to know if you agree with this, of the first Biden Trump debate. And Biden just, it almost felt there were points where I was just hoping that he was going to tell him to shut up, like Biden did with Trump. And it wrecked, it admittedly wrecked that debate, but then it reset it for the next one. And I've got a funny feeling nothing's going to change in the next one. And there's even more bad blood because Starmer's come out, and rightly so, and said he's a liar.
Yeah, I'm hoping he really should have corrected the record on the night. I don't buy into the 4D chess nonsense because he did try and correct it. It's consumed the news cycle because I think the media like this is an easy line to go with post debate, because there wasn't much to come off the debate apart from that, really, when you think about it.
I
No,
think
there wasn't, was
Starmer
there?
should start out by saying, look, you lied at the last debate. Why did you lie? Like, you're supposed to be moving away from Boris Johnson. Like, we're supposed to be being on it. We have to be honest with the public. You're being dishonest with the public. Will you please apologize? If I was Starmer, I would start off with that. So you force him into a corner where he'd be like, oh, no, it wasn't, and try and get out.
I would say to the host, I'd say, like, look, I don't want to spread, I don't want misinformation spread on your show. This man lied and he should be told to correct the record. And I'd put it on the host as well to actually do that and say, like, you know, he got away with it last time. Like, are you going to make sure you actually do your job? Because, like I said, that lady did an abysmal job hosting. Like, the way it was done as well, where they asked the question and then she kind of moves on, she shifts the question a bit. And it's like, I heard no answer the first time. Now you've moved on. It doesn't make any sense. And they should go back to the audience member and say, do you think they answered your question?
Exactly, yeah.
That's much better viewing. That's much better viewing, like, for everyone. And it's much better for politicians because, like, no, he didn't answer the question. And you're like, yeah, you look like a twat. Try better next time.
I
So,
think I
yeah.
could, like, honestly, though, I could see where that would end up because Sunak's done it before as well. I feel like Starmer would say, you lied, and then Sunak would go, well, you lied about all the things that you were going to do when you
Spot
ran for
on, yeah.
leader. And he would say, you know, that everything's changed and blah, blah. And it's just going to go around in a circle. And I think we just really need two people that are on it with policy. Like, I just honestly, like, the reason why I feel so frustrated with British politics right now is that there is just an absolute dearth of policy that says this is what we're going to do for working class people to help you. And it drives me crazy. I wrote some stuff down. I researched when you asked me on today and was like, what's the first thing that comes up about policy for the parties? The Conservatives want to update the Equality Act to protect women and girls, making it much less likely that trans people will be safe and be able to access spaces. Labour have said a triple lock on using Trident, you cost, and from figures that I did before, Trident costs us about 2.1 trillion every 3 years. The Lib Dems want blue flag beaches so that there's less pollution there. The only ones, which, by the way, I am now a member of, so obviously I'm going to say that they're good anyway, but was the Greens, who have said that they're going to do 20 billion capital investment in the NHS paid for by a wealth tax. And then I worked out where they'd actually get that from, because I was a bit like, how are you going to afford 50 billion? The top 10 billionaires in the UK have 124 billion between them. The total is 175.93 billion. Then we've got 2,849,000 millionaires. These are credible figures. If we taxed the wealthy, then we would be able to supercharge the NHS. That's the kind of stuff I want to hear. And instead, we've got these milquetoast, petulant arses arguing at each other at podiums about, like, well, you're the biggest liar and the meanest person. It's like, is this really our politics?
Yeah.
It just
No,
wants some good policy.
those green policies are really good. Like I am impressed with them. The only problem, the media are not platforming them as much as they should be.
No.
That's frustrating, like for me personally, because like whenever you do see them, you're like, oh, that's actually interesting. Like this is good stuff. Like equalizing capital gains and income tax. I'm like, yeah, it's literally, why is that not the case? Like, why has that not happened yet? And Labour
Yeah.
dropped that policy, and that really pissed me off. So I'm like, why should I, a person who goes out, like, not even goes out, who does her job, pay more in tax than someone who just makes money from stocks and shares? They literally
Yeah.
gamble on the stock market, and they're allowed to keep more of their money than I am. It don't make sense.
It doesn't. And also, to further that point that you said, why on earth, we are not in America, why are we only having two leaders? They're making a foregone conclusion that it's, I know what the polls say, that's not the way to run a democratic system or or media to show that democracy exists in the UK. All of the leaders should have been platformed at the same time. End of. And if it takes 2 hours, then it takes 2 hours. But there's
Yeah.
no way on earth they should have done with just two parties, despite what the polling says. I thought it was
America
outrageous.
has multiple leaders as well, and they're the more fun debates. So America does have, like, I think they have like six or seven, like, of the nominees on there, to discuss things. I think Nick Clegg did really well at the TV debates back in 2010 as well, because they did just the big three, really, the Lib Dems, Labour, and the Tory Party. And so yeah, I think, 'cause apparently Labour didn't want Swinney on. They didn't want
Didn't want it.
John Swinney, the
Oh yeah, I
SNP
didn't
guy,
really want.
and that's the reason why he might not have been there, which
Then you
is a
don't
bit
have the
shit.
debate. Then ITV just draw a line and go, okay, then we don't have
You
it.
see,
It
the thing
shouldn't
is,
be allowed.
the leaders also negotiate. So
Yeah.
we don't know. Like, for example, the idea that the question didn't go back to the person who asked it in the audience, that could have been something that was agreed by the by Sunak, for example. Sunak said, no, I'll come on your debate, but if you're going back to ask the person what they thought of my response, then we're not doing it. I'm speculating here,
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
but
Well,
it's possible.
I'll further that. The Rejoining You Party and Volt are the only two parties that are saying we want to go fully back in, and they've been completely sidelined. And you go, okay, maybe Lib Dems, but like their policy doesn't make any sense because I think they want single market customs union, and that can only happen within the. And Norway have absolutely said no. I think Greens have said something similar as well, haven't they, Davey?
I think they've said they want to get back into the EU, but it depends
Yeah.
on the terms. I think that was their, well, it was from a couple of years ago, or last year, I think I read that, but they said it depends on the terms. I'm like, good luck negotiating, guys. It's not going to go well.
Yeah,
No.
haven't heard anything new. And ultimately, like, one of the, like, I was playing, like, you mentioned 3D chess earlier. I was playing 3D chess earlier in 2016 when I voted to remain, because I knew that it's like buying a new car. Like, the second you drive it off the lot, it's lost a lot of, and that's exactly what happened to us. Like, we'd be over a barrel in terms of negotiation with the EU, especially because of the economy as it stands and because of the things that are happening in the world and where we are with it. But, like, one thing that there's one specific reason why I would be very interested to get Brexit back on the agenda in terms of discussion. And it's not what you think, because we can see a consolidation of this hard right movement across Europe right now. We've got Marine Le Pen making links with Meloni, and then there's all these other, like, microcosms of far right governments taking over. I would like to have a genuine good faith discussion with our politicians of, is it the case that we might be better delaying and seeing what happens with Europe, or should we try and join to wrangle this scary movement that's taking shape over there under control in some way, shape, or form? But they won't even acknowledge that it's happened. It's
I would say let's look at, if we look back at history, these nationalist movements, which are a relatively modern thing, only ever in within a democracy as well, only ever seem to get about 30, 33% of the vote. They never get the full amount. But they'll get a significant proportion. They'll be able to do some influence within politics as a result. And so people feel as if their voices are being heard. But it's always down to the economic turmoil. Some arsehole turns up and basically starts saying, racist stuff and putting the blame on some sort of group because they're foreign. And frankly, when you look at the detail of racism, it's as logical as flat earth theory. That's how much logic there is in racism, and yet it never gets pulled up and pointed out on the same terms. And that's why you only ever get 33% of the population ever seem to back it. It never gets beyond that. What tends to happen is that 33% will then go into power, and then something will happen which will allow them to have complete control.
You're thinking of the fire in the Bundestag, aren't you? Is that what you're about to mention?
But you could do the March on Rome with Mussolini, only had 33%. Franco never had it, he just took it by force.
I guess once you get enough support, then you can pull a stunt like that. Then you can pull a controlling move. And I guess, like, 33% of a third of a population is still quite a lot of people. So I guess at that point, like, people are like, oh shit, I don't want to fight back. Like, ultimately Hitler was given control, wasn't he, politically, despite the fact that he only had what, like you're saying, 33%. He was given it by, I think it was Hindenburg, I'm gonna say.
Go on,
And obviously,
you're in the
yeah,
right
the
track.
March on Rome, the king obviously was like, your dog, I ain't messing with that shit. You do what you want, big dog. Like, I'm out. Just leave me here. I think that's the whole thing. Is like, yeah, the monarch was like,
Won't
well,
play that
as long
game.
as I'm still here, we're all good. So, it depends. Like, I think at that point, you've won the game. There's no point like trying to win another election. You've got the game. You might as well just go for end at that point. That's all Hitler did.
I find the UK parliamentary system interesting in that way because really there are very few checks and balances once you're in power, especially if you have a major majority. There are checks and balances. You've got the committee, you've arguably got the Supreme Court, you've got the House of Lords, but they're very minor.
It's
You
based
have
on
a
norms.
huge amount of power
That's,
compared to what you have elsewhere. So it almost, in many ways, stops you needing to go full dictator.
But this
And
is the
especially when you've got
problem.
the check of the rest of the party that are embedded in the idea of democracy in the UK. It might
It's
be like the one saving grace about our parliamentary system.
like Madge just said, then it's based on precedent, and this is the problem. I read a really interesting book a couple of months ago that was about the British Constitution, which does exist, but not in a tangible form. And did you just mention Lord Hailsham, Madge, as well?
No, I don't even know who that brother is, but we'll pretend I
So,
did, so I look smart. Lord Hailsham.
In the 70s, he did a speech where he was saying that a lot of people would prefer to be an elected dictatorship because it takes the kind of like spiciness out of public debate, and you're told what's going to happen, and that's it. And I think that we saw the Daily Mail make a case for that a little while ago. And the problem that I have in terms of what's happening now is we've seen this consolidation of a hard right movement in the UK because of what you just said. There's a lot of economic disparity, and we saw that massive wealth transfer during the pandemic. And the concern that I have really is that we have people who, and I know that this is going to stir up some passions, and I really just want people to listen to me because I'm not trying to be insulting here, but you have someone who's kind of a more like liberal type, like Starmer, who, much like in that debate, is trying to play by the rules. And, well, this is what it says, and blah, blah, blah. And we're playing with people that aren't, like, you can play by the rules. You're playing with people that aren't playing the same fucking game.
Yes.
Like, Farage and all of them, they haven't been playing the same game. Let's not forget, these are the people that illegally prorogued Parliament so that they didn't have to be scrutinised. These are the people that have lied to us and broken the laws, taken away fundamental freedoms. They're the people that have made everything as shit as this. And turning around and being like, but the rules say, that's absolutely not how we're going to win.
It,
The
it's like
Johnson
playing
one.
Monopoly with someone who steals money. I agree with that. And I think Starmer should have been stern with that host when she stopped him and said, look, he lied. This is what's happened. This is the situation. You can't let him get away with that, and I won't let him get away with it. That's what he should have done. That's what Sunak did. He just talked over the host, and it's like, no, hold on. I'm not finished yet. And then she was like, oh, okay. It's not much she can do at that point. So that's what he should have done, and said, look, second time he said that, I have to correct the record. That's all he had to do, and he didn't do
But
it.
he
Is
didn't
this
do
the
it.
Ming Vas idea that he's just trying not to rock any boat whatsoever? I'm not defending it. I'm just trying to speculate as into what The
he's
2K
thinking is.
tax thing, like, imagine all of the people who are not going to watch the post-match commentary or kind of the general commentary. They tune in for debate because it's the big dog's plane, right? And they're like, oh, he's going to put 2K on my tax. Oh, he didn't really refute it, and it goes into the classic trope of Labour, put your taxes up. There's no Ming Vars there. He like, I think David Moore was saying, like, he's playing by the rules. He's saying, oh, the host has said I've got to stand down. Okay, so I've got to do that, when he should have been stern. Like, it's like they didn't do a lot of debate prep, like how to deal with aggressive
No.
debaters.
And it showed, which is really weird for a barrister as well. But then I
But to
guess
be
you're only ever
fair,
talking to a judge. You're not actually talking to someone who's confrontational.
the judge will stop you if you get confrontational, if you get aggressive with the other person. The judge will, like, look, stop doing that, or I'm going to throw you out. In a debate, the host can't do that because there's
Well,
a
you can.
respect
I
in a
mean,
court.
you depends on the host. I know plenty
Oh,
of those.
shit.
David Dimbleby would have ripped into him, told him to
Yeah.
basically shut up.
Or
I would have told
Paxman.
him, if I'd been Keir Starmer, I would have told him to shut up. I would have even gone so far and gone, are you so insecure as a person that you have to interrupt me when talking? Because that's essentially what he was doing. That's a sign of insecurity.
That's the
And I
thing,
would have
and
hammered him.
that's what we need. We need people with that kind of steel. Like, again, I can talk all day about policy and the stuff that I might want to see and everything, but ultimately we just need someone that's going to be decisive. And Sunak, the reason that Sunak just slightly edged out that YouGov poll is partly because it's owned by a Tory, but also because he came across as, I'm just going to say things, like, I'm just going to get this done, you know? Like, and he's apparently, by all accounts, he's used public taxpayer money to pay for a debate coach, which just, I cannot imagine being the person that has to train Rishi Sunak on how to talk.
If you interrupt me one more time, you motherfucker, I'm cancelling the Zoom call.
I'll add this. Sunak, and I found this fascinating. Sunak brought up corruption and questioning about the security of, yeah, exactly, David. I saw those eyes rise. Raise. He brought up corruption and dishonesty with Starmer, who you're like, I really think that's just so wild and weird that you brought that up. But Starmer didn't have the nuanced sense to go, well, wait a minute, your wife and you are getting money from Infosys, who are still trading with it with
With
Russia.
Russia.
He didn't bring up Boris Johnson having gone to a sex party that, according to the Italian Secret Services, is a KGB event, a honeypot event. Didn't bring up Russian interference. Didn't bring up all the bots. Didn't bring up the fact that Russians have been allowed to come into the UK and kill British citizens. Didn't bring any of that up. Didn't bring up the fact that Temerco, according to Led by Donkeys, paid Rishi Sunak 4.5 grand. You do not become a Russian oligarch without Putin's permission. He didn't bring up the fact that in the Lords, we have a son of a KGB agent who, on the BBC, was extolling the virtues of invading Crimea and suggesting that Putin was right to do it. You can only become a Lord of Siberia with Putin's permission. And yet, Starmer didn't have any of that in his locker. I was literally wanted to scream though when he was saying it. I was like, wow, the hypocrisy. You've literally got a government that refused to investigate Russian interference. Who's the real security threat?
Yeah, I'm actually amazed. I'm actually amazed. Like, he kind of fumbled that question as well. And like the stuff with the nuclear submarines is a joke anyways, because our main problem is cybersecurity. Like, we got hacked by the Chinese. The MOD got hacked literally this year. What are you going to do? Use your nuclear deterrent? Say, China, you hack us one more time. I swear to God, yeah, we're going to drop three nukes on you. Like, it don't make sense, honestly. Like, the stuff he's pushing about national security, it don't make sense.
No, it doesn't. And I think they're way out of touch. I mean, I've written a book on the changing nature of warfare, and I question all these big nuclear submarines I get, because the Russian system that I'm aware of, if you launch nuclear missiles from the UK into Russia, they'd have about 12 minutes, but by the looks of their interception systems, they'd be able to knock out the nuclear missile. And I don't think the nuke blows up in midair. It has to, I think, hit a certain altitude for it to be able to detonate the nuclear bomb. It has to hit its target at a certain altitude, I think. So those nuclear missiles in the UK are useless. So I get why you'd have a submarine. And the reason you have the submarine is they have 30 seconds to respond, which isn't enough time. You won't be able to do it because of the speed of the missiles. And so actually it works as a pretty damn good deterrent. And frankly, you've got a lunatic on our borders. And I say that as a European border and as a European. You do want some sort of deterrent like that to deal with Putin, because if you take out even if 6 to 10 missiles get through, the size of those bombs would just, that's the end of
Because
Russia.
we've
And
got
that's
two
enough
as
of a
is, right?
deterrent. But you're right as well. We don't do enough with cybersecurity. That's the other thing. And we
We've
don't
got two
invest enough
subs,
in
right?
nuke.
I think we've got two nuclear submarines as is, right? And he's going to add four, I think. So we're talking like six submarines potentially. And like, Davey, how much do you say one of those submarines cost? Was it in the trillions?
It's 2.1 trillion every 3 years, according to the last time I checked. I did
So,
those. Don't quote me on that, by the way, because it might be the other way around. I have this thing where I flip figures around, but I did that research for
sure.
a cost saving thing, and as far as I'm aware, it's a trillion, over a trillion a year, every 3 years.
Like, you add in three of those or four of those, right, to the budget, and it's like, how the fuck are you paying for that? But you're going to keep the two child cap? Like, this shit don't make sense, especially when it's not going to be effective. Like, what? Like, how many nuclear submarines do you need? Like,
So
that's the point.
we've got 10 nuclear subs that would make us have
10.
14, and I think 6 are going out commission in the next 10 years because they're just old and need upgrade. Either they're old, so old they're obsolete, or they need upgrading.
Maintenance and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So you've got 10, and I think each sub has 10 intercontinental ballistic missiles, but they're multi-warheaded.
And then
I
pushing the
think.
line on this, like, did you guys see Rayna got community noted on Twitter because she goes, "I never supported unilateral disarmament." It's like, effectively, you did because you voted against Trident, and it was in a free vote. And then you had the bold dude, I can't remember the defense, the shadow defense secretary, was like, "Well, David Lammy voted against Trident, Nandi voted against Trident, and so did Rayna. You know, what caused their change of heart?" And you're like, this is so dumb. Like, this is so dumb. Like, it doesn't make sense to push this line when you've got the people in your shadow cabinet that you do have who literally voted against this in a free vote. Corbyn gave them a free vote and they still said, "No, I'm morally against this." 'Cause that's what happens when you vote no to something in that situation. And so it's just wild, honestly. Like, I don't know what they're thinking. I would have pushed the MOD thing as well. I would have just said, "Look, China literally hacked us. You guys are a threat to national security. You've hollowed out the military."
Well,
That's the
this is the other thing that with Russia. We Edinburgh University and Swansea University reckon there's about 200,000 bots. We know that Twitter has about 20% of the people on there are bots. That's according to Musk. Yet again, because you don't talk about Russian interference, that problem doesn't get dealt with. And here's the other kicker. Since we left the EU, Mark Zuckerberg was invited to come in to represent himself and explain himself about interference and what he's doing to stop all the craziness on Facebook. And he turned us down, but he turned up for the EU.
Yeah,
So,
because if he didn't turn up for the EU, he wouldn't be
oh,
operating Facebook in the EU.
yeah, it would have
And
been
that
rough
would,
for him.
but again, he's so powerful, he can actually ignore a country. The you know, with the, what are we, seventh largest economy, fifth largest economy now? I'm never sure because we seem to go continually
But
down.
it's falling down.
isn't Rishi Sunak and him like mates and stuff? Couldn't Rishi put in a word and say, "Come on, Mark, come on, please"?
He's friends with Elon Musk, isn't he? Because they did that fucking speech together where Rishi Sunak was like, "Not enough people take time to out of work to invest in ideas." I'm like, "No, because I'll die because I don't have that much money, you freak."
All right, I'm going to do quick fire questions. Are you ready?
Go
So I'm going to ask you questions from the general election and
on.
then ask what you're going to do. And then I'm just looking for quick fire answers, like one thing you could do to improve each. And you'll probably all end up doing a better job than the pair of them, which would be
Which is easy.
hilarious. So first up, I'm going to ask about the economy. Max, give me one policy you'd like to implement being prime minister for the day that you think would actually boost the economy.
Tax on wealth. So there's, as we know, this huge amount of money has been transferred during the pandemic. That has been assets have been bought with that wealth. So a tax on wealth would bring in a huge amount of money, and it would set a precedent where it would continually be the case. So. And it would be difficult for politicians in the future to roll it back.
Davey.
I would probably do the same thing, to be honest with you. When it comes to taxing the rich, I think it's absolutely vital. And we've also got softball on them. We do actually have to tax assets and make sure that they're not just making passive income, or if they are, that it's still taxed, because that's where the problem seems to lie.
Badge.
I would raise capital gains tax to be above income tax.
Good. Okay. Next question. Brexit. Yes or no? Would you overturn Brexit if you're Prime Minister for the day immediately and get us back into the EU, Max? I'm not suggesting. I know, of course, I'm gonna put a very nice caveat in there. That is on the presumption in this little fantasy that the EU are gonna say, yes, we want you back. So, quick yes or no, Max. Would you go straight back into the EU as long as the EU was saying, yes, please?
Yes.
Davey?
On balance, yes. I think there's things that we would still need to look at afterwards, but absolutely yes.
Madge?
Yes. So when negotiations go badly, I'm only there for a day, so I can say I would have done it better than you.
You
I would have
did.
got better terms.
You could have done it over a cup of tea.
Yeah, I don't need notes, guys.
Okay, cost of living. One policy that you would do to actually make an effect on someone's life that you could just pass straight away. Madge.
I would raise benefits in line with inflation. That's the bare minimum I would do. Like if I was there, yeah. I would uproot public sector workers by the amount they lost because of the Tories if money's no issue. That's what I would do. So I'd put public sector workers like 35% raise or whatever number they wanted. I'd say you can have. I'd be like TI. You can have whatever you like.
So, in which case, I'll do it as two questions. So the first one
Okay.
is within the budget, and then the next one is if money's no object. So I'm going to throw that over
Perfect.
to Davey. If, within the budget, what would be the thing that you do for the cost of living?
Cost of living wise. I struggle really because I don't really know what's best for every. Like, I like to think about policies that are really pluralistic, but to be honest with you, one thing I'd be really interested in is trying to sort out issues that kind of result from cost of living. I would actually like to see a focus on eliminating period poverty. And I know that seems like a weird one, But it really annoys me that we're still having the debate about VAT on these products and finally having it scrapped. And then, so looking at stuff like that is quite important to me because I think it's something that would help everybody, but especially the most disadvantaged people out there that desperately need it.
Nice.
I would say, like Manj said, increased benefits in line with inflation. So, and I think it's insane that it's not the case. So a triple lock on benefits. And if the money was no problem, of course, the UBI, universal basic income.
And Davey, if money was no object?
It'd have been UBI as well, to be honest with you. UBI is something that I think is crazy that we don't do because it's money from the state that goes back into the state.
Oh, yeah, that's it. I mean, it stabilizes the economy on a level that I think they don't realize and they don't want to realize. And in many ways, that's part of the reason why we have a welfare state, because it actually stabilized the economy. So you didn't have this almost bottomless end of depression. It meant that there was a certain level of the economy could only go so low. And that's part of the reason why they brought it in, which seems to always get missed out. I always find it funny as well. Considering that Brexit was all about, we're going to be about British people, as soon as Brexit ended and we removed ourselves, they then started attacking British people and attacking the disabled and the poor and making them out to be scroungers. And you're like,
Yeah,
wow,
but
you're just.
anybody, any person that's ever read Britannia Unchained would know that that was always the plan. They hate us. They hate the working class, and they always have. And Brexit was always going to be an assault on the working class. Like it took a few pages of that book for me to be like, wow, these people fucking hate people like me.
They're
Yeah,
the party of
yeah.
workhouses. At the end of the day, this is the nasty party. They had a rebrand. Theresa May was like, "Look, guys, we can't be as obvious with this stuff." But they're still the nasty party. They still don't give a shit about disabled people. Never have done.
I'm absolutely certain. I mean, Rob even said it, didn't he, in that little promo? I don't believe in economic rights. I don't believe in social rights. And you're like, okay, so essentially you want some form of neo-Darwinism, social Darwinism, where it's survival of the fittest, and it's a good thing that the weak die. And that's literally what you're saying when you say you don't believe in those rights. Max, do you
I
want to
know
say something?
when you said Rab, I thought you were talking about when he said that, well, people go to food banks because they have cash flow problems.
Totally misread. There was no surprise he misread that document, didn't he? But I mean,
Yeah.
he couldn't even be bothered to read the fucking Good Friday Agreement, which he was. I mean, what is this?
Don't forget the classic, the sea was closed.
My favorite thing about Dominic Raab, when because he was Boris Johnson's deputy. And when Liz Truss replaced him, apparently she sent people in to look at the Bill of Rights that he was drafting when they were going to look at repealing some of the repealing some of the standard rights that we have. And apparently, Liz Truss's expert team said that this is incredibly amateurish and doesn't make sense. And I'm like, really? Dominic Raab doesn't know how to write legislation about human rights? I am shocked and stunned.
Wow, and that's coming from someone that wrecked the economy by being amateurish and childish.
Bearing in mind that was her advisors, not Liz Truss, considering Liz Truss is now saying exactly the same things as Dominic Raab. I want to pull us out of the ECHR and remove human rights and also make everyone that doesn't like me very sad.
Joy. On that note, if you like what you've seen today, please click that like and subscribe button. If you like these two guys, go and check them out. There are links in the description. And if you quite like to help the channel, we actually have a shop which you can go and buy loads of goods like mugs and other stuff.
Lava lamps.
Love lamps! Yeah, all hail the lava lamp.
I'll hail the lava
Lava lamp.
Tune in next week for another exciting story from the files of
Computer,
Police.
auto-destruct sequence.
I don't know that.
Shit. I think you have to actually know the Star Trek nerd stuff to be able to initiate it. So there's an actual code from the movies that I think Picard uses. Star Trek. And if you say those numbers, it actually does an auto-destruct sequence. Such a
Saucer
geek.
separation.
Some
Are you
programmers out
a Star Trekker as well?
A little bit.
A
there. I
little.
was.
Yeah. No one wants to admit it.
I was. I loved it when I was a kid, but then I just kind of got bored of it as I got older. I'm more into like magic and alternate dimensions and demons than I am into like sci-fi, because I could see sci-fi things happening, whereas I like actual escapism, and I couldn't really see demons taking over the earth until 14 years of conservatives.
Okay, Kirk, Picard, Sisko. Who'd you pick? Or Janeway?
Picard, every time.
It's probably a toss-up between Picard and Janeway for me. Probably Picard, just because he seems a little bit easygoing. Janeway seems like she'd probably shout at me and I'd cry.
Max.
Picard every time.
Sisko, although I had such a crush on Janeway.
Understandable.
Understandable. Computer, auto-destruct, code 000, destruct 0.
Sorry, I'm not sure about that.
Everyone dies then.
Computer, start code 000, destruct 0.
Destruct sequences activated.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5,
Hurry up.
4, 3, 2, 1.
And now Alexa goes on fire, is it?
Yeah.